Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. Great to have you with us today. Wow. Another fabulous show lined up for you. I know I say that every show, right, because they're all good. The information that the guests bring are just very much necessary, and I'm very, very fortunate to have the caliber of guests that I do have that agreed to come on the show and share their expertise with us. And if you follow the show for a while, you know that every month we have, or matter of fact, every 2 weeks actually, we're very fortunate enough to have an entrepreneurial segment for all of the entrepreneurs out there and would-be entrepreneurs, or those who have entrepreneurs in their lives. You can share this information with them. We have an author, a teacher, a professor in the house, okay? He is an awesome, awesome author. He's written a book. Actually, he's written two books. One is called Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. That's Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Businesses, The Road to the Top. And he's also written another book called Finding a Career for Life. Great, great author and a great, great guest. And to all of the new listeners, I want to first welcome you to the show. Again, every time somebody starts to follow the show, I'm notified of it. And so I just want to say welcome, 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 and welcome to the entrepreneurial segment of Health, Wealth, and Divine. Well, today, as promised, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Again, he's author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. You may wonder why 105 business principles. Sounds like a lot of principles, right? Well, we can tell you all about that as we get into the interview, but there's more than just a few principles that you're going to need to know about if you are going to be successful as an entrepreneur. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest before we get into the interview. Currently retired, Joseph Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. Over his lifetime, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. After his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management. And in order to help people succeed in business, he's written Entrepreneurial Success, wrote 101 practical business principles, and that those principles just keep growing and growing and growing. Professor Geiger now lectures and teaches seminars at the University of Richmond, located in Richmond, Virginia, and where he currently resides. Again, the book started off as 101 business principles, but as any entrepreneur would tell you, something new always pops up, right? So when they do, Professor turns it into a principle and puts it in a book, and we're fortunate enough to have him to come on the show and break down the book with us. We're going through his book, principle by principle. But let me get to him, Professor. As always, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on as my guest today. Thanks for agreeing to come back on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great, great. Again, we benefit so much from being able to sit at your feet for a while and to glean from the over 50 years of knowledge that you and experience that you've gained being an entrepreneur. Again, back to the title, 105 Business Principles. A lot of times that might shock a lot of people when they're like, 105 business principles, because if anybody's ever gone to a library or read books on entrepreneurship, rarely do you hear of more than just a few principles that the author of that said book will give you as a roadmap to success as an entrepreneur. But yours is very different, Professor. I mean, 105 business principles. Wow, that's a lot. What made you compile so many principles into a book?
Well, my view is, as somebody who's started 11 businesses and built and sold 10 of them, that if you have a principle, it needs to be actionable. In other words, you need to be able to take the principle, match it up against your situation, which the principle addresses, and be able to take action. If you can't do that, well, in my view, you don't have anything that's valuable. What happened was when I started teaching entrepreneurship, the textbooks that I had, they talked about principles, but when you got through reading about one, you said to yourself, well, this really sounds good. Can I actually do it? And very often the question was, well, actually, no, you can't. So there's a lot of things that happen with businesses. You have to get the money to start it. You have to have a plan. There's lots of parts to the plan. You've got to start the business. You've got to hire people. You've got to advertise. You got to just do all kinds of stuff. And instead of generalizing on them, what I thought I'd do is come up with a book from my many years of experience and making mistakes, and try to be very specific. So if you wanted to put up a roadside sign, you could go to the book and look it up, and it will tell you what the principles are to do it. If you want to have an advertising campaign, well, you can go to the book and see what the principles are to do it, and so on. And so that's the reason there's so many, that they each address a very, very specific principle or a very specific situation. And so if you need to get money, well, there's a number of ways you can do it. And each of them, you need to understand how they work and whether or not this particular way is applicable to you. And if it is, well, then is there a principle there that I can actually take action on? And you'll find that there is. And that's the big difference between my little book and, well, it's not so little, it's 360-some pages, but my book. And most others, both just books or textbooks, that when you come up with a problem, you can look it up, and I probably have addressed that problem. I mean, I did it for 65 years. I had 11 businesses now, and so I ran into lots and lots of problems and tried to figure out a way to solve them. And very often, the way I tried didn't work very well, and so you come up with a principle of how you solve that particular problem, so when you address it in the future, you'll know how to go after it.
You know what's interesting about this book, too, is that the principles span the gamut of multiple types of businesses. I mean, you know, when people start talking about opening a business, a small business, then, I mean, that could range from a florist to a gas station to a, you know, to an auto body shop. I mean, to real estate company. I mean, you know, to whatever a person decides that they want to go into, you know. And these principles aren't just limited to one sector of the, you know, business world. I mean, there's so many different businesses that you can think of, and whatever category or that your business would fall into, these principles can assist you in that particular endeavor, correct?
That's correct. And basically there's three general kinds of businesses. One of them is a service business. So you render a service. Say a plumber has a service business. And another one is you sell stuff. Walmart sells stuff, so they have a retail business. And another one is you make stuff. Caterpillar Tractor makes stuff. And so those are the three kinds of businesses. And then there's some others that are kind of similar. You mine if you're mining for gold or whatever it is. That's a little different. But you're performing a service, and you're supplying a product. So that is kind of a manufacturing business if you think about it. So those are the three different types, And each of them is very different. And I've had all three multiple times. I have manufactured things three times, three different, totally different types of things. I have had service businesses, like a paper route is a service business. And so I've had service businesses, and I've had retail businesses that somebody else made stuff and you sold it. And each have very, very different products, problems. And each of them some are more difficult than others. A manufacturing business is way more difficult to handle than a retail business. And a retail business is more difficult than a service business. So the easiest of all of them is a service business. Because with a service business, you really don't have much in the way of inventory. You don't have that whole gamut of stuff. And you don't have products you advertise. You advertise your service, but that's about it. And so they're very, very different, but they have similarities. And so in the book, you know, if you decide you want to have a motel, that's a service business. And the types of things that you're going to do with a motel, if you looked in my book, you'll find most of them, it addresses those particular problems of how you do it.
So with the service business, it seems, again, back to your point about it being the easiest, because you're just selling the service. There's no inventory.
Yep.
There's no real, it seems like there really wouldn't be a cash flow issue unless that cash involved you collecting for the service that you rendered. But if you take somebody, for example, that opened up a tax preparation, you know, they do that and they get paid at the time that they do the service.
Well, hopefully they do. Sometimes they don't. you know, sometimes if you have an individual's tax, you do the tax. But what if you're doing it for a business and the business has three locations? So you're doing it for all the three locations. Now you have a billing problem and you're going to have to collect your bills. So how do you go about collecting bills? If you have a collection problem, you can turn to my book and you can find ways to collect bills that are very, very unique. And they work where others often don't work. Or if they do, you end up with only getting a piece of your money back. Usually if you get 50 cents on the dollar, you've done very well. And with mine, you get 100%. And with most of them, you get 50% of your money and you make enemies. With mine, you get 100% of your money and you make friends. So it's a little different.
And definitely for the cause of the book, again, you can save yourself God knows how much money. And I guarantee you, if you get the book, you're going to definitely recommend the book to others. And we're going through the book chapter by chapter, principle by principle. We're actually up to chapter 4 now, and we're on principle 33. So that's where we'll start today's show. Principle 33 is you must define the problem before you can solve the problem. Professor, a lot of people, oftentimes, they acknowledge the fact, for example, a person's business, they can't make payroll on payday, they realize that they have a problem. But, I mean, beyond that,
yeah.
I mean, it goes a little deeper than that. You got to be more precise and get to the root of it. So we'll talk about that. You must define the problem before you can solve the problem. Would you talk about that?
Well, yeah, let me back up just a little. The previous one is that there are six principles in problem solving. And defining the problem is principle number two. Let's hit principle number one very quickly. And principle number one is decisions should be data-driven. That's the first part of this, and it's an overarching. So don't make decisions based on feelings you have to have data. You have to understand what is going on. And if you don't do that, the whole darn thing falls apart. And then the second one is you must define the problem before you can solve the problem. That sounds obvious. You would think that everybody with an IQ above 10 would be able to figure that out. But you would just be absolutely shocked how many people don't do that all the time. And how do you do that? It's one thing to say you must define the problem before you can solve the problem, but how do you actually do it? I mean, that's fine. How do you execute it? Well, let's get an example here. And let's say that you and I own a delivery service, a priority delivery service, and we stumbled and fell yesterday, and we did not deliver a package on time. And it was a very important package to our customer, and the customer called and read us both the Riot Act and said, "You ever do that again, and you're through, and everybody I know is going to know you're through, and why?" So we huddle for about 18 seconds and decide we better figure out what went wrong. So how do you do that? So let's start asking some questions. We have this trucking company, and so what do we do? Who would know what went wrong? Well, the person who organized the deliveries would know. So we go to that person, and we say to them, "Why was the delivery late?" It's a perfectly simple question. And he says, "The truck broke down." Oh, well, so if we get a new truck, do we have the problem solved? Maybe, maybe not. So then the second obvious question is, why did the truck break down? And he says, well, the truck wasn't lubricated. Why wasn't the truck lubricated? The driver didn't lubricate the truck. Why didn't the driver lubricate the truck? Well, the driver was not trained to lubricate the truck. He thought that somebody else was doing that. He thought he was hired to drive it. But he was supposed to check the oil and other things. We thought he was doing it. He didn't know that, evidently, because he didn't do it. So why didn't the driver lubricate the truck? So why wasn't the driver trained? We said he wasn't trained. Well, the driver wasn't trained because you and I got together and said this training program cost too much, so we canceled it. Okay, what is the problem? Have we defined the problem? Well, the truck broke down as a problem. Do we just need a new truck? No, I think not. Why did the truck break down? Wasn't lubricated. Well, do we need to hire a lubricator? Well, maybe. But that's not really the problem. The driver didn't lubricate it. So we need a new truck, we need a lubricator, and we need a new driver. Will that solve the problem? I don't think so. Why wasn't it wasn't lubricated? Because the driver wasn't trained. Hey, maybe we're getting someplace here. Mm-hmm. So why wasn't the driver trained? It's because Joe Geiger canceled the training program because it cost too much. So maybe we need a new Joe Geiger out there who doesn't do stupid things like that. We need a new training program. So we must define the problem before we can solve the problem. What is the real problem? The real problem is that we canceled the driver's training program. So we need to reinstate the driver's training program. And now we have solved all the problems. Had we had that, none of these other things would have happened. If we just got a new truck or a new driver, they still would have happened. But by putting in the driver training program, we've now gotten down to the very fundamental root of the problem. and we can solve that with a new driver training program. So
well,
that's what I mean when I say you must define the problem before you can solve it.
Well, if you want to even carry that example a bit further, even what if you looked at it and said, okay, well, even if you say, well, it cost too much, that's why we canceled it. The cost too much would probably be based upon all of the other expenses combined that the business would have, you know, incur on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, and based upon the fact that the in this particular case, you, as the owner, were saying that it costs too much, based upon all of the other expenditures that the business has, you know. So, because if we paid for the training program that is deemed too costly, that obviously would take money away from some other area of the business that could use the money. So, could it be taken a step further and say, well, look, since this is, now that we've gotten to the root of it, it is definitely a necessity to have this training program so that the truck won't break down. Do we now need to look at everything else and maybe see if we need to cut back from some other area that might not be as necessary as the trucks so that we can, in fact, balance the books and say, okay, in order to afford the training program, I can cut away from maybe not advertising, but, you know, some other expense that might free up some money for the training program.
Well, let's say that our training program costs $1,000 a month. So if you divide $1,000 a month, what does that come out to? It comes out to $30 a day. So if we had $30 a day for 30 days, you're pretty about $33 a day. So what we've done is we've really tried to save $33, $34 a day. And for that, we lost an account that very well may be paying us $5,000 a month for priority deliveries. Maybe our priorities aren't very well organized. Maybe if we say, well, if we don't cancel this, we're going to break even. We can't make a profit. Well, then let's say that we deliver 300 packages a day, and it costs us $33 a day. Maybe we ought to add 11 cents per package to the delivery charges, and that covers it. So we have a problem in how we're going to fund the training program, but the training program was a fundamental cause of the problem. Funding the training program is a whole different kettle of fish. But the one thing what we did is we canceled the training program, and it caused a very severe problem. We darn near lost our number one customer.
Gotcha.
So where are the priorities? So, you know, then figuring out how to fund it, that's a different issue. Maybe we can find some other way to fund it. How we fund it is incidental to we absolutely have to have this program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's,
okay.
You know, that's We drilled down until we found the fundamental problem, and we have solved the problem. Now, how we fund that solution is a different issue. That doesn't have anything to do with that's the problem that caused this not delivering the package on time.
Man, that's a standalone. That stands alone. How you deal with that? Now that's another issue. But
that's
but
right.
Funded,
it's
you
another
must.
Issue. But the issue at hand here is how do you make sure that you're delivering on time and having trucks break down? And now, you know, the truck broke down. It probably cost us a whole lot more than $34 for that day for the truck to break down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gotcha. I mean, that takes our $1,000 a month And that just buries that. I mean, you know, we could very well have spent $1,500 just renting a truck and getting it done and doing all the stuff that all of this thing caused for a day or so. Because,
mm-hmm.
your truck broke down. That's the problem for tomorrow and the day after tomorrow until you get the darn truck up and running. So
mm-hmm.
you caused yourself all kinds of problems. And why did you cause the problem? Because the boss, me, canceled the training program.
And sometimes suppliers and other people that you have to do business with, business partners, are not so forgiving when it comes to excuses like the truck broke down.
They don't care. That's not their problem. And anybody who even mentions it is stepping into quicksand because they don't care. They only care about did you perform the service I'm paying you to perform, and the answer is no.
And you know what's interesting about that, Professor, is that as unforgiving as people are when it comes to that sort of thing, they take that position even though everybody realizes that it's life and life happens. But when it comes
yeah.
to things that can be avoidable, you know, like, for example, a tornado, you know, you can't control that. You know what I mean? You know,
mm-hmm.
but the truck breaking down, you can. So even though people realize that, hey, this is life, stuff happens, never use that as an excuse, you know,
right.
because some things that happen in life can be avoided.
Yeah. Now, it's probably a good idea to tell your customer how you solved the problem so it's not going to happen in the future. And that is more a curiosity
reassuring.
Thing. Reassuring. Yeah, you got the right word there. That's to reassure them that it's not going to happen again. And so you tell them that this instance sparked us to really do a deep dive, and because of that, we have done the following thing. We have instituted a program to help our drivers that's going to cost us $12,000 a month because we didn't deliver your package on time, and we're spending that so that will never, ever happen again.
Mm. Good point. So that principle right there was worth the cost of the book. Everybody, if you have a question, go online. All you have to do is dial 347-325-7227. If you're listening by phone, all you have to do is just press 1, and I can bring you on, and you can ask your question. Okay, moving on to principle number 34. You can't achieve goals until you set goals, you know. And these are specific goals because, again, a lot of times people, you ask somebody, well, why'd you start your own business? And they might say, well, because I want to be rich, you know,
mm.
and then to them they may use that wealth piece as the goal. I'm sure when you say that in order to achieve goals, you must set goals, you're talking about specific, realistic goals, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you do. One thing I ought to mention is we're talking about entrepreneurs here, and how many entrepreneurs are there? And the IRS has an ongoing survey that they've done over for many, many years. Actually, it's done by the National Labor Relations Board, and they use IRS figures to figure out how many people there are who are entrepreneurs. And it's really kind of interesting. If you took all of Greater Richmond, which is close to 1 million people, and from that 1 million people, you sorted out all those people who have income from a activity, be it as an entrepreneur or as a job or whatever it is. One-third of those in their lifetime, or now it's a little higher than that, it's probably more like 38% of them, will be an entrepreneur at some point in their life. And you may be whatever you're doing. You may be a janitor and you think, I'm never, ever going to be an entrepreneur. And then all of a sudden, because you're a janitor, you come up with a new broom or a new chemical or a new something, and you are an entrepreneur. There's a fairly famous one of a young lady who got a degree in classical dance as a ballerina, and she couldn't get a job in ballet. And so she thought, well, I got to make a living. What can I do? One of the things she had done when she was learning to be a ballerina is trying to find the very specific clothes, and they were hard to find. So she started a clothes business for ballerinas, for ballet, and became very wealthy. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who, right out of college, he was a farmer. He was the son of a farmer in Kansas, and he got out of high school, and his dad said, well, you're an adult now, young man. Don't expect me to support you, and you can live here, but it's going to cost you $100 a month or whatever it is, and I'm serious about that. The only job he could find was as a trash collector in the little town that I lived in. And he turned that first year as a trash collector into taking over the trash collection business for the little town. And by the time the rest of us were out of college, he was a pretty wealthy man. Wow. And had a home of his own and new cars, and all the rest of us were in debt and then just getting started. So just because you think that I'll never do this, the odds are pretty high that you will. And at the rate things are going with the internet and all, it would not surprise me that the day is not too far off when 45 to 50% of all income earners will be entrepreneurs at some point in their income-producing lifetime. So the next thing in how you solve problems, and one of the things that happens, we all have problems. That's part of living. But when you start a business, you just got a lot more of them. They come at you faster, and they cost more because there's more people involved and more money involved. So you better figure out a way to solve the problems in a expeditious way that doesn't allow lots of mistakes. And the first thing is you understand that decisions must be data-driven. The second one is you must understand what the problem is. And the third one is you must set goals. So you have a problem. What is your goal? So if you're going to college, you're going to start to college. And what's your goal? I mean, is your goal to spend 4 years taking classes and come out owing $50,000? Is that your goal? Well, quite frankly, that's pretty easy to do. Now, how are you ever going to pay back the $50,000? You haven't addressed that.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to say, what is your goal? You need to set a goal that's a specific thing that's set in a specific length of time. And you need to then try to achieve that goal. And if you're in business, you're going to end up with a business that sets lots of goals. Lots of goals in the size of the business, in what you're doing, in the number of people it takes, in the amount of money that it takes to do it. You have lots of goals. And each of those you have deliberately set, and you deliberately work at trying to achieve that particular goal. And then you may have 10 goals. So you have 10 individual goals, and you have a plan for each one of those goals on how you're going to solve it, how you're going to get there. But you better set a goal, because if you don't set a goal, what you're going to do is spend lots of money and not achieve hardly anything but debt.
You know, Professor, I see the phone lines are lighting up, and somebody wants to talk to you. You ready to take a phone call? I want to come
sure.
back, though, to
happy
this.
To. You bet.
You take the call. to the point that you just made about setting the goal and having a time frame for that goal, because a lot of times people set goals and they don't really have a time frame for that. And we can talk about that after we take the call, all right?
Okay.
All right. 1139, you're on the air with Professor Geiger. Thank you so much for your patience. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. A very interesting show. I'm actually a global visionary and wanted to have the professor address what's happening with the internet and spirituality globally, and also comment on trade wars. That's old paradigm. It's based on control and corruption, but there are ways to develop unlimited passive income streams with creative utilization of information and networking, and I am bringing forth these strategies, and I'm pointing out that companies, the big corporations, can't handle what's coming because they're not built in the structure. They're all more or less ego-based and selling-based. Selling is old paradigm, too. I say any company, you have to now not only have the best products and the best customer service, you have to be good to your employees, your customers, the environment, and give back to the community in ethical, legal, moral, transparent ways. Otherwise, as communications take hold with these strategies, it's going to change the whole dynamics of not only global economics, but also education, politics, religion, and more.
Well, what you're talking about, let me address a couple of things. The big companies, that is an age-old one, and there were big companies that made wagons, and then somebody went and invented a car, and the wagon no longer needed to be a big deal because we weren't using horses, we were using cars. And then somebody else invented a better car, and so the first car company went under, and the second one is going like gangbusters. And that's happened over and over and over again. And you can see things that a really good one in 1890, I think it was 1896, Remington invented the typewriter. And shortly there were Remington typewriters everywhere, and lots of people came up with the idea of we'll also make typewriters. And Remington was one of the last to go out of business in 1996. They made it for exactly 100 years before they went under. And they went under, and this I find is just astonishing. They went under with their still trying to sell typewriters when their own office had already converted to computers sometime before, and yet they continued to try to sell typewriters, and they went bankrupt. And there are hundreds and hundreds of examples of that. You say the little guy is much more agile, and that's one of the big things that the little guy has, is he's way more agile. He may come up with an idea, and then he may come up and say, maybe I ought to treat my people better. And here I have 10 employees, and they're all trying to achieve my idea. Do any of those 10 employees have another idea that might, one, replace mine, or two, do a better job of making my idea work better? And Lincoln Electric is an excellent example. They made welders to start with, and they came up with an idea that basically said, if you are working out on the shop and you have an idea on how to make the welder better, make either a better welder or make the current welder faster and less expensive, we will pay you a lot of money for that idea. And then they put that all in operation in 1935. And by 1937, right in the depths of the Depression, they had people who were making $12,000 on salary at $100,000 a year because they had an idea. And they didn't have one or two of them. They had lots of them. And they made, their employees did such a good job of figuring out how to make their welders faster and cheaper and better that they had a 10-year period from 1936 or 7 for 10 years that they did not raise the price of their welder $1, even though there was lots of inflation, but their people did a better job. So when you say that there are folks out there who are able to do things better, that is the entire history of entrepreneurship. And it doesn't make hardly any difference whether you're talking about making steamers or locomotives or stagecoaches or what it is. That's the little guy is the one who drives it. And the internet is one of the reasons why the number of entrepreneurs is growing at such a rapid rate. And it is absolutely just exploding, and to a large extent because of the internet.
Caller, still with us?
Yes.
Okay, did you have a further comment or question?
Yes, I like what he's saying because I am a global visionary and my last name has global recognition. Maybe I can co-author a book with him and help bring more peace and love into the world too, because I wonder if, again, I want to go back to the spirituality. Eric Butterworth wrote a beautiful paperback book years ago called Spiritual Economics, and that's where a lot of the controls that are put on employees by these big corporations, these people, they don't want that anymore. They want to see the value of the time and effort they're putting in on a job, and they don't want their creativity stifled. And the old paradigms with the oil-based companies, the Tesla energies are going to come around again, or other things, and that's where what I'm talking about, the strategies I'm putting out can't be stopped because they're not ego-based. It's like a Pac-Man game of transparency that will keep going back to where it has to go to have people change their ways and become more caring and sharing and build products not with planned obsolescence, but build it with the quality. And my last name has global recognition in the food service field. If I could share my name, it might be of interest to you and the professor and the listeners.
Well, I've got a certain amount of sympathy for the larger corporation, and I have built corporations that had two or three people in it. I've run several of them who had several hundred. And I got to say that as you get more and more people, it is very difficult to do something about the desire to put controls over people. Because basically what happens when there's one or two of you and you're spending your own money, and then you have 10 people and somebody else starts to spend your money, you get a little antsy about that. Well, if you have 1,000 people, there's going to be a whole bunch of them who are spending your money. And if they make a mistake in spending your money, something you perceive as a mistake, it doesn't hurt them, but it sure hurts you. And that is very difficult to make peace with. Now, you have to do it, but how do you make peace with it without stifling your employee? And
by, again, incentivizing the employees with passive income streams that they would be very appreciative of you. And you could do the same thing with the customers of the company. That's why I say things will be changing as these strategies take hold. Now, I've been around. I actually worked – at Union Carbide's world headquarters. I was there when that gas leak in Bhopal, India happened, and I worked 100-hour weeks as a contract security officer. Yet I tested my entrepreneurial wings as a sole proprietor. I have documents on the internet that shows where I gave Union Carbide an absolutely perfect contact over in the United Arab Emirates. They circumvented me and probably did multi-millions of dollars in business. So that's some of what the big corporations do with their high-paid lawyers and all kinds of ways to put the screws to somebody when they think they can, through the greed, just monopolize. And look what's happening with Google now, too, paying off all the politicians to bypass the antitrust laws and that.
Well, I'm not too sure that's something we should get into, because we could really get. And I have, I have some very, very strong feelings on that. And I think that what I see, I don't know whether you've done it, but you ought to look up Lincoln Electric, and look at their system, which was is without question the best system for a manufacturer I've ever heard of. And they help their employees, and they help themselves. They help their employees as individuals. They help their employees as groups. And they help their employees as all of the employees together. They paid all of them for, and it really worked. And what happened to you, it's too bad that it happened, and it happens lots and lots of times. And very often what happens, the company is a big loser in the end. Had they stuck with you and let you help them, they very likely would have made two or three times as much, and you would have gotten rich and they would have gotten richer. But they don't do that, and I don't know any way you're going to stop that, because I think that's been going on forever. Other than you start your own thing, and that is, in my view, it's a solution. But I don't think you're going to reform the big company. I just don't think that's going to happen.
I want to say thank you so much to the caller for taking time to call in. Professor, we have a few minutes left in the show, and I want to make sure that we tell the listeners how they can get your book. But again, back to setting goals. When setting goals, you mentioned that you got to have a time frame. You know, that's very important, because a lot of times people set these open-ended goals, and you know that because
it's
open-ended. Yes, exactly. Could you talk about the importance that you touched on it, the importance of setting a time frame when it comes to your goals?
Well, you not only set a time frame, you set a goal. You set a time frame to achieve the goal, and then you put together a plan that, let's say you set a goal that you're going to do something or have achieved something in 1 year. Well, that's fine, but then there's other things that you have to do, which is the next steps in this thing, in this problem solving. Where you have a plan, and you can't have you have a plan that decides what you're going to do, how you're going to achieve your goal, and then you have a cash flow forecast that decides how you're going to achieve it month by month. And so you have a major goal that you're going to achieve in a year, and then you have monthlies that you in order to get to your 1 year. And you better make sure that each month you take another step to it, because setting a goal that I'm going to walk a mile and then just standing there doesn't get your mile walked. So you set a goal that you're going to walk a mile in 15 minutes. And where are you in 5 minutes? Are you a third of the way? If you're not a third of the way, you're not going to make your goal. If you're halfway, are you going to be able to keep that pace up? So those are the things that you set a goal, you set a time frame, and then the next steps, we're at step number three, you have to step number four is come up with a plan of who, what, when is going to make this happen. And step number, step number five is a cash flow forecast to see do I have the money and the personnel and the products to achieve my goal in the 1 year. And it sets monthly partial goals that can I achieve each of those. And then step number six is executing the whole thing. And by executing, every week you say, am I on schedule? If I'm not on schedule, I'm not going to make my goal. So I better be on schedule. So if I'm not on schedule, what do I need to do to get back on schedule? So this is, we're at stage three of a six-stage program. But it takes all six stages in order to really achieve the goal. But you got to set it before you have any hope of achieving it.
You know, one theme that is throughout the book is planning. You know, and, excuse me. You know, when people go into deciding that they want to become an entrepreneur, they have this vision of the end game. You know, they have a vision of what the business is going to look like when it's up and functional and, you know, running on all cylinders, clicking on all cylinders. And even before starting the business, they dream about the business. But when they dream about the business, they're not dreaming about the nuts and the bolts, you know. They're dreaming about the complete car or the complete, you know, whatever it is, you know, completely and totally functional. But throughout your book, one theme is present, and that's planning. You know, could you talk about just the need to have a plan? And a plan is not a plan while it's still in your head. It's not a plan until you put it down on paper. Because
absolutely,
a lot of times people want to skip part.
Well, I think you're dead right. You have to have a goal, then you have to have a vision. You have to have a vision, and then you have to have a goal, and then you have to have a plan to achieve the goal. And the plan to achieve the goal is, if it isn't a written plan, it's not a plan. It may be a nightmare, it may be a dream, it may be something else, but it most certainly is not a business plan. A business plan is a written plan. And there's two fundamental parts of a business plan. One of them is what you're going to do and who's going to do it. And the other big part is a cash flow forecast that says how are you going to do it and what's it going to cost. And if you don't have the money and the people to execute the plan, it ain't going to happen. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be in writing. And then it needs to be where you can monitor it and execute it day by day, week by week, month by month. And I found that if I, when I finally figured that out and then actually executed it, I had a year's plan. It was a monthly plan. And then every Friday I would put the next week down of what do we need to do in order to achieve the plan that we're halfway through it, we're at 6 months, so what are we going to do in the next week to stay on target? And then the next Friday, do the same thing all over again and follow it week by week. If you're one little bit off, you can probably fix that. But if you haven't fixed that one and you've gotten a little bit off this week and a little bit off the week before and a little bit off the week before that, pretty soon you look at it and there is no way to achieve. All because you didn't do the daily job of staying on plan. And that's just, you come up with a plan, you come up with a cash flow forecast, and you execute the forecast week by week. And you better be on target every week or you won't achieve your plan. And that's one of the fundamental problems that young entrepreneurs and not so young entrepreneurs made. And it's a constant fight. I mean, when I was 30, I began to figure this out, and by 40, I had it figured out, but I wasn't able to execute it very well. And by 45, I got to where I could execute it pretty well, but you can't quit. I mean, Monday comes, and mm-hmm. are you ready for Monday? And if you're not, things fall apart. And I don't care whether you've done it 10 times before, they don't count. The only one that counts is this one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not doing it this time, the whole thing can turn to a bunch of worms. It's terrible. And just
it's not what you
did
last time or what you're going to do the next time. It's what you're doing this time.
Yeah. When I was in the airplane business and I was flying a whole lot, when I would everybody says nobody ever got killed on a takeoff. They got killed on a landing because they squashed the airplane in. And so I'd come in downwind, and I'd squirm my butt at the back of the seat and set up really straight and say to myself aloud, this is the first landing I've made in this airplane at this time at this airport. Now, maybe I made 500 last week, but that's last week. This is
mm-hmm.
this week, this time, and it better be good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing is true in running a business. I don't care if you've done it 50 times in the past. We're talking about number 51.
Right.
And you better do it right in number 51.
Mm. Everybody, my special guest today is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Professor, I'm sure after this show, everybody's going to want to know, how can they get your book? It's a must if you are an entrepreneur. If you're serious about being an entrepreneur, you know that you need a guide. You know that you need somebody to walk you through the pits and the valleys, the peaks and the valleys of business, because they're going to be things that pop up at the worst time, things that you just were not expecting. But to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And this book will forewarn you. And, I mean, of course, we're talking about principles that can save you money and principles that can also make you money, okay? So, you know, it's not just a book of gloom and doom. No, it's a book to help you succeed, okay? And if you're serious about succeeding, you'll get this book. Professor, how can they get it?
You can get it at Amazon, and just go to the Amazon books and type in Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, and it'll take you right there. And on the cover is a picture of a very steep winding road. Actually, it's a winding road in Canada, China, and that's the book, and that's how you do it. Or you can get it from me by going to Entrepreneurial Success, you'll find me there. Or you can find me. The easiest one is theroadtothetop.com.
If you're going to Google it, make sure you, as after the Entrepreneurial Success, you put in 105 Business Principles. Very important.
Right.
Make sure you put in the 105 Business Principles, because if you just put in Entrepreneurial Success, there'll be a lot of other books that pop up or a lot of other things.
There will.
Okay. So, Professor, I want to thank you for another great show. And thank you so much for the caller that took time to call in. Everybody, if you're listening online, you can actually follow this show. There is if you click follow, okay, there's a button that says follow, and if you'd like to click that, then you'll be notified every time there is a show. You'll be notified of the guest, the date, the time, and the topic. Professor Geiger comes on every 2 weeks. Just so happens today is Wednesday, and he came on today. But normally, it's every other Tuesday. So the next time he'll be on is Tuesday, October the 2nd. So mark your calendar. And in the meantime, get the book, okay? So that way, by the time he comes back, you could have read up and be caught up to where we are. Matter of fact, you can actually read ahead. And I guarantee you, you're going to like the book. I've read it several times. And each time you learn something different, something else stands out to you. And if you're an entrepreneur and you have friends that are entrepreneurs, definitely encourage them to get the book or get the book for them as a gift. We've got the holidays coming up soon. There'll be Christmas be here in a minute, you know, before you know it. And I mean, just the holidays, somebody's always having a birthday. So, and that you can just get it just because. You don't need a reason, but certainly with the holidays coming up, now would be a great time as a gift for your entrepreneurs, friends, family members, or even for yourself. Treat yourself to an awesome book that you'll love and that you'll recommend. Professor, any parting words for our listeners? Great show again. Thank you so much.
Well, not really. Looking forward to continuing so that we can get the full session in, the full six principles on how to solve problems, because we all have them, and I'll guarantee you, if you follow these, they work.
And this book is not just for entrepreneurs. The principles are good for life as well. I mean, there are times when I've actually thought I had a situation that I needed to deal with, and one of these principles came in handy. You know, the one that comes to mind is, what's the downside? You know, sometimes
yeah.
when you're looking at it, you need to know, should I pursue this course of action? And one of the principles in the book is, what's the downside? You know, and so that's one that comes to mind that I've used several times. So, again, these aren't just principles for entrepreneurs. They are definitely entrepreneurship principles, but also principles for life as well. So you get a double dose of wisdom and knowledge when applied in that way. Professor, thank you so much again. Great show. I look forward to our next show. Everybody, again, Professor comes back on October the 2nd. That's a Tuesday. Mark your calendar. Class starts at 7 then. So, Professor, thanks. I'll talk to you then.
See you then. Bye-bye.
Take care. Everybody, that is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, again, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. And this book just keeps growing and growing and growing. So, again, I want to encourage everybody, if you're serious about being an entrepreneur, again, it's not just waking up one day and saying, you know, I'm going to start my own business. There's a lot involved, a lot involved. There are cash flow forecasts, I mean, you know, attorneys, I mean, all kinds of things that you might have never thought that you would have to deal with. And there's a way to deal with it, okay? And if you need somebody to hold you by the hand and walk you through the process, then you need this book, okay? So I encourage everybody to get it. Also got an announcement to make. Got an awesome show tomorrow. I want to make sure everybody's aware of it. Dr. Orwa Hehimedurain Comet is going to be my special guest tomorrow on that's Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Got a great show lined up for you. It's called 2019, The Year of Return. 2019, The Year of Return. Dr. Incommon is taking a group, those who want to go. There's going to be an excursion going back to Ghana and Benin. Okay, that's going to be in the last days of December, early parts of January. Okay, but the show, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Okay, from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Mark your calendar, write it down, make sure you're with us. You don't want to miss this show. Dr. Incommon is a regular guest on Health, Wealth, and Divine. And if you scroll down the archives, you'll see awesome shows with Dr. Incommon on different aspects of spirituality. But tomorrow's show is going to be on 2019, the year of the return. It's been 400 years since we've actually hit these shores, okay? And so this year is going to mark, it's got a special significance. And so taking a group of people back, those who want to go to Ghana and Benin, and it's going to be fabulous. I mean, you should, oh, my God, I can't wait to do the interview tomorrow, because I know he's going to talk about all the wonderful the wonderful things that you're going to experience if you decide to embark upon that trip with them. So, again, please tune in tomorrow, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, again, if you're listening online and you haven't joined the show, or shall I say followed the show, all you have to do is just click follow, and you'll be able to do that. And, again, you'll be notified of the date, the time, the guest, and the topic, okay? Thank you again so much for your time. For all of you entrepreneurs, again, I wish you nothing but success. If you want to enhance the odds that you are successful, get the book by Professor Joseph Geiger. That is Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. By the way, Geiger is spelled, in case you want to Google it, is G-E-I-G-E-R. That's by Joe Geiger, G-E-I-G-E-R. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? At Tepu.